is often the standard of our belief as well as our practice, personal intent. The various modes of worship which prevailed in the Roman world were all considered by people as equally true, by the philosopher as equally false, and by the magistrates as equally useful. The Church of Rome defended by violence the empire which she had acquired by fraud. I have recorded the triumphs of barbarism and religion. So wrote Edward Gibbon, the 18th century British historian, in his classic, The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire. I've never been an easy joiner. I refused to go to Cubs and Scouts or to gym classes. I remember some kid telling me, "You want to go tumbling class with me tonight? No, thanks." Or sports teams. It seems to me in my memory that I spent a lot of time peering out the window between the slats of the Venetian blinds. School, as I recall, in the earliest days was a nightmare, and the schoolyard was a desert. Children I didn't know, playing games I didn't care for, and I can remember myself huddling up against the curb in the stairs, waiting for the bell to go back into the classes, which seemed interminable. Nice childhood. I like to spend time alone with my thoughts in a narrow and very select world. Now, I'm sure there was more to my life than that, but these are the memories that seem to arise for me. And I realize that this is the worldview out of which I basically still live. This will be no surprise to you. You've known me a long time. I seem to have two modes. One is the green room, preparing to go on, and the other is the public stage in public performance. Those are the two modes of my life. Now, I can pour it on in my public self and then retreat into the privacy of my own world. For 43 years, my friend David McCain and I conducted burn suppers just about everywhere, across Toronto, across Ontario. We even ended up in Nova Scotia on two occasions, singing the songs of Robert Burns and telling crazy stories and listening to the pipes and all the rest of it. And I had a wonderful time, and at the end, I would love to do the Elvis exit. Elvis has left the building. And I'd race through the crowd with one shoulder down and sit in the car with the lights on in the snow, waiting for my friend David to get us out of there. And, of course, he would chat with everybody in the whole place and go over their plates to see if they'd left anything of the dinner, and then he'd sample it. And it went on, and I'd end up hitting the horn about 20 minutes later, saying, "Come on, come on, the show is over, let's go." And yet in my days as a doctoral student, I found the friendship of my classmates to be wonderful. We did things together in class and after class, walked and talked and laughed. And I found the strength of my professors inspirational, and I listened as I'd never listened before in my life. Dr. Charles Rice was our teaching of preaching, and he was quite excellent. He would say things like, "You know you're going to get from A to B, but don't rush getting to A to B. It's not a straight line. It's a curve and it's a diagonal, so tell them lots of things. What color was it? What time of day was it? What was going on just outside the frame? Tell them that kind of thing when you're preaching." And he said, "Listen to the public radio networks and see how they do it. They know how to hold an audience." And so every morning, Charles Rice would have us listening to Don Amos in the morning from one of the radio stations in New York City. And Don Amos was the man everybody loved to hate. He was so rude and so vulgar and so hysterically outrageous that people hated him by the hundreds of thousands. "Listen to Don Amos," said Charles Rice. "That's how you hold an audience." And then he would say, preach from movies. Preach from novels and books. Go to a movie and bring me a sermon on the movie." Well, the only movie in town was The Karate Kid. So there were 20 of us at The Karate Kid. And we had 20 sermons on the blue bicycle. Wax on, wax off. 20 sermons on The Karate Kid. And then there was the summer at Iona, 6 weeks in Iona, where I was one small cog in a volunteer staff. And it was the most remarkable time, 30 of us. And I worked an 8-hour shift like everybody else. And I was part of what was called Abbey Housekeeping. And I did the laundry and I cleaned the toilets. And I served Sunday tea. I hope those two didn't come together. And then I worked in the servery, and I washed the floors and cleared the tables and did the dishes. That was my role. And once you realized how you do it and followed the big book day by day, well, you could swing from the chandeliers, and all was quite wonderful. For a shy person tending to stick around home and being in performance or preparing to be in performance, it seems strange to have spent my whole life in a church community, doesn't it? The most public place in the world is a church community. The people are here on a regular basis, strangers walk in through the door, and we all deal with each other all the time. And yet it seems to me I've been welcomed over 48 years and encouraged and permitted to spread my wings and fly and encouraged to shine. Be our leader, they say. Shine for us, they say. You shine, shine. All right, I'll shine. But being an only child has a certain perspective which has been set in my mind, and that perspective is that armor is the empowered individual. Armor is the empowered individual. It isn't the team. It isn't the company of players. It is the single champion. And so by nature, I've always kept my eyes on the lead, my eyes on the person at the center of the stage. I don't have a vision of the roadies. I don't really see the backup band very much. I don't see the concession staff that makes it all go. I, by nature, and I am unable to follow the sports plays as they unfold on television. My children can follow them. My grandchildren can follow them. I cannot. Did you see the play develop? My son will say, what play? I'd say, well, didn't you see how the puck went from here to there? No, I didn't see that. I just saw the puck on occasion as it crossed the blue line. Is that what it's called, the blue line? It drives them nuts. So I watched the pitch to the bat, the slap shot to the net, and the bowling ball to the pins. That's it. I don't see anything else. I don't see the spin or the tacklers or the unfolding play. For me, the armor is the empowered individual, the superstar who commands the stage and wins the day. I remember that Joe Carter caught the ball on the winning season in the 1990s, but I have no idea who hit the ball, nor do I care. There may be wisdom in my caution, you know, because there are dangers in groups of people being together. I often tell people, I went into the ministry because I knew I could sit alone in a seat at the front and no one would be around me. I didn't count on the choir being so close week by week. There is danger in large numbers. A movement can become a mob. We've seen that happen. And righteousness can become a riot if it's pushed too far. And the desire for tribe and community can become intolerance and fascism. But I'm suddenly realizing that all of this is changing for me now. It suddenly struck me that armor is community. All of us together is the strength. I was a member for 20 years at the Arts and Letters Club of Toronto, artists and visionaries and painters and sculptors and all of us together. Two rules: you didn't ask what anybody else did, and you didn't talk about politics. You just sat at long tables and had lunch with each other. And my little niche in the place was the spring show. For years and years, the Arts and Letters Club had created and written and prepared and rehearsed and acted in the spring show. It was the precursor to spring thaw, if you remember spring thaw over the years. And so for 20 years, I would gather early in the fall around the piano and pick up strange sheet music and think to myself, I'll never learn any of this. And slowly it would go into my thick head, and slowly I would learn to sing the songs and find my place on the stage. I could never do the dance step, so I stayed well at the back. But then we performed, and it was so much fun sitting in the green room and being on the stage. And at the end, after it was all over on the last night, I can remember, with the curtains closed and the audience leaving out the front, I would come up the side stairs and stand on the stage and simply try to sniff in the air to hold the feeling just a little bit longer. Perhaps we are to look at biblical texts as people in large numbers working together for something great. Would that be a new way of looking at biblical texts, not so much as heroes in the spotlight? If you were to take a drone and fly it over ancient cultures over time, I think you would see that ancient cultures were very much like anthills or like beehives with varying degrees of success. People knew their social place and their role, and they were rewarded by being permitted to belong, and they were punished by being exiled or executed as the rulers and the company saw fit. We all win or we all lose by cooperation or dysfunction. That was the rule in the ancient world. Heroic names are but a symbol of grit and glory that belong to the whole people. Had you thought about it that way? It was a new thought for me. Moses, then, is everyone awake to God. And Elijah is everyone fighting for the purity of God. And David is everyone whose heart is precious to God. And Isaiah and Amos and Jeremiah are everyone awake to social justice and the willingness to fight for it. And Mary is everyone embodying the sacred promise. And the woman at the well is everyone facing a dysfunctional life and seeking its healing. And Mary Magdalene is everyone who ever braved the tomb, unwilling to let go of love. Does that change the way we see the scriptures, do you think? Armor is community. The human community is too small and frail in its singularity. We all lose heart, but together we are heroic and we are mighty. Is that a good thought? We hear this theme in Solomon's Prayer. Now, Solomon's Prayer, read this morning, is a creative masterpiece edited by the powerful of the time. It says that armor is community. Armor is community when the leader is just and responsible in his service. And armor is community when the people show appreciation and loyalty to a just leader and follow in the common dance. We see that need. We feel the benefit of good leadership. We feel in our hearts that we want to do the right thing. The prayer is on to something. When there are fires in British Columbia, we are all concerned as the province burns. And firefighters from the United States and Mexico and other places from all across Canada take time away to go and fight the blazes that are ruining people's homes. It's in us. It's in us. And the Fort McMurray fires last year, tremendous empathy and fundraising from across country and from around the world. And the Humboldt bus crash, and years ago the attack on the Ecole Polytechnique. To this day, we still march with white roses to remember that travesty, that tragedy. And citizens marching as late as last week to oppose the rise of the alt-right, standing around those, and we say to them, "This shall not be the way we will be strong together." And the prayer continues, armor is community when there's a central well for refreshment. Do we have any central wells for refreshment left anymore? May the temple be the touchstone for all, says the prayer of Solomon. Well, is there a central liturgy to which we walk? Are we more than Ford Nation? Are we more than Leaf Nation? Are we more than those who gather for a Drake concert, do you think? Is there a central liturgy that we walk together, something deep enough to carry us? Is there an anthem that we sing, all of us, from the heart? Money, money, money must be sunny in a rich man's world. Is that a good enough anthem for the human heart to sing in this generation? What about somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly? Why then, oh why, can't I? Does that take us farther than we go today? There is a central loyalty, and we know it, to which we all rise. On Remembrance Day, I try to gather myself with thousands of others along Queen Street and stand by the cenotaph. And I stand there with the crowds, and the silence grows. And people representing soldiers from a variety of wars stand around the cenotaph and bow their heads. And the flags are lowered, and there is a silence. And there is the trumpet, and there is the bagpipe. And then there is the formation of the flight overhead, flying the missing man formation, a series of small planes, and then one bursts into smoke and begins to fall from the sky. That's all I need to hear. I don't need to hear the prayers. I don't need to sing the anthem. I don't need to hear what the politicians and leaders have stepped forward to say. I have seen it and I felt it in my heart, and I have paid my respects. We do that. Do we have a place as that mentioned or alluded to in the Great Prayer, a shared sense of common humanity, a hope beyond these moments. Where is the arena for the big themes? Life and death and love and loss and gain and the meaning of everything. I was thinking, as governments seem to retrench, it may be time for the churches to gather people and talk about human sexuality. Maybe it's our place to do that. And maybe it's time for us to gather people together in our churches to talk about the truth around peace and reconciliation before indigenous issues are pushed off the scale by governments too small to handle them. It may be the church's time and responsibility to ask teachers and experts to volunteer an evening and come and talk to the general public about things governments will not allow us to say. We have strength together. Armor is community. To whom do you tell your secrets? To whom do you unload your burdens in a burdensome life? Years and years ago, I had a learning partner at the Center for Christian Studies. She understood me, and I understood her, and we sat together for a year. Years afterwards, she developed cancer, and she was dying in hospital, and a friend said she would love to see you, and I couldn't make myself go. I couldn't make myself go to see her like that. And I went to the funeral, but who cares? I gave my condolences to her husband, but who cares? And I carried that guilt around with me for a long time until I sat in my own office with my colleague later in years, Anne Morwood, and she was a friend, and I was a friend, and I confessed to her my inability to go, and Anne said to me, "She loved you, you know. She would understand that. She knew you cared. You didn't have to go and sit by her bed and say it," and I felt a burden lifted from me. Where do you get to go to do that in your life and in this culture? Is there a central place? Now, Solomon's prayer wisely includes the stranger and the foreigner. It's important to include the stranger and the foreigner, the immigrant, the ethnic, the illegal, the unwanted, the ones we all read about in the newspaper, the ones claimed to make cultural diversity a danger to Canada. Where do you draw your line around the foreigner? All of us has a line. Is it you and yours? Is that the line? Is it your friends and your friends' friends? Is that the line? Is it skin color? Is that the line? Is it social class, similarity of work or interest? Is it the decade of your life and the one just below it and the one just above it? Is that the line? Is it the orientation of your experience? I've come to see that there's only one web and we're all in it, one creative moment, one experience of life. All else is a false wall, and to put it up begins to do damage to the one web. It's a simple concept, and I feel deeply that it's true. My natural bent is to be alone and in hiding, and it has applied to worship, and it's made me see Jesus as a singular phenomenon, as a superstar. And I think I've made a mistake in doing that, because there's more to him and more to his story than I'd seen before. It was never about the disciples in my mind, never about the mission or the public crisis that brought it on. It wasn't about the injustice or the empire. It wasn't about those brave historical antecedents that gave birth to him in the first place. I missed all that. I just saw the look in his eyes and the passion in his face. Just Jesus, the magician of the Spirit. Well, the church has championed that view. It's a view that will weaken us and separate us into individual pieces. The church has told us over 2,000 years that Jesus is the magic pill to cure all ills, and it is in the pharmacy of the church. And Jesus is the golden key to relieve all misery, and it's in the pocket of the clergy. And the promise that allows systems to go on abusing us. Just take the abuse, the system will save you in the end. And it is the threat that frees our worst insecurities and guilt to send us straight to hell, disempowering the living, the experience of life every day. But community is the real superstar. I see that now. Armor is community. The phrase "Son of Man" may tell us a far truer story. The Son of Man is the whole people over time on a whole mission, a whole people over time on a whole mission to refresh the earth with awareness of a divine presence. It's the Son of Man who is coming to judge and to finish the work and to redeem. Truth and justice and love and transformation are in the hands of all of us together. Armor is community. God speaks to all of us as light refracted through the story of Jesus Christ. The light of God is always brighter than the stories that carry it. I wrote a little chunk on my Facebook page. I can't help myself the other day. They just go out there into the ether and people either unfriend me or do whatever they like. It doesn't really matter. It isn't my God or your God, I wrote. It's just God. Existent or non-existent, knowable or not, verifiable or not, it simply is and does. Perhaps our least best response is certainty, and our best response is curiosity. The famous whole armor of God passage in Ephesians has changed for me too. I thought it was about personal armor, God's engagement with me. But armor is community. The writer of the text is correct when he says there are millions of flesh and blood enemies of good things, pure thoughts and bold dreams. Millions of them outside the door. Racists and misogynists, ethnic cleansers, sadists, gangsters, dictators, torturers. And then there are all those other forces that the author can't even name. They are so deep and insidious among us, hiding among us, that he can't even name them. Simply calls them demons of the air, principalities and powers, but we know what he means. But there are also in us universal and timeless expressions of a loving way, and the battle lines are drawn. Words to describe it sound weak among us, but they are mighty. Words like humility and kindness, self-sacrifice, affection, patience, trust in the moment. And over against it, the raging evils of the broken, festering world are still with us every day to dishearten us. The same dying migrants, the same suffering minorities, the same populations trapped in war zones just as they were yesterday, enslaved partners and children in brutal homes, the plagued, the exhausted, those who live without love. But armor is community. In all the battles of the ages, and I don't want to be overly martial here, but in all the battles of the ages, there have been images which stand and give us strength. The Highland Charge, where the Highlanders dropped their kilts, grabbed their broadswords, and ran in mass down the hills to a bewildered enemy. The British Square, whom no enemy could crack. Once the first man knelt, the second man stood behind him, and the third man loaded the rifles. The Roman Legion, covering itself with its shields, leaving no man on the field, fighting for your neighbor, the strength of community. Now, churches these days seem either locked inside themselves with an air of stuffy and unchallenged certainty, or else merely scattered shells of their former selves, less cohesive than they remember, either smug deniers of a living force that is moving them in ways they don't want to go, or shell-shocked veterans who can't believe the carnage which is suddenly falling around them. No simple hero model can turn the tide. Every single force is the child of a greater, wiser movement that gives it life. Armor is community. To see it as individuals makes it sound weak. Now, this is an exact text from the letter to the Ephesians. Listen, when I read it, it sounds weak. Therefore, I beg you to lead a life worthy of the calling to which you've been called, making every effort to maintain the unity of the Spirit. Well, but to see armor as community sounds more like this, I think. Once more into the breach, dear friends, once more, and close up the wall with our English dead. In peace there is nothing so becomes a man as modest stillness and humility, but when the blast of war blows, then imitate the action of the tiger. Stiffen the sinew, summon up the blood, for there is none of you so mean and base that hath not noble luster in your eyes. I see you stand like greyhounds in the slip, straining upon the start. There is power in armor as community. When scattered, we know unity. When hungry, we know nourishment. When injured, we know shelter. When dying, we know a song for the road. When lonely, we know a friend. When raging, we know moderation. When disillusioned, we know stimulation. When defeated, we know rescue in the field. When victorious, we know seedlings for eternity. Come, let us hold tightly to one another, shall we, and feel the unity of Christ in the armor of this mighty community.
After we have formally passed the peace, I invite you to greet each other with the word peace. Following this, we will affirm our faith by reciting the United Church Creed found in the bulletin. The peace of Christ be with you always. Also with you. Let us greet one another with the peace of Christ. We are not alone. We live in God's world. We believe in God, who has created and is creating, who has come in Jesus, the Word made flesh, to reconcile and make new, who works in us and others by the Spirit. We trust in God. We are called to be the church, to celebrate God's presence, to live with respect in creation, to love and serve others, to seek justice and resist evil, to proclaim Jesus, crucified and risen, our judge and our hope. In life, in death, in life beyond death, God is with us. We are not alone. Thanks be to God.
Good morning. Hazel and I are celebrating 50 years, and I think it's particularly appropriate for us to be here at Met in the relatively short time that we've been members and started to come here after a full lifetime in another congregation. We've been welcomed by everybody, by so much, and we have such a community of people. We really appreciate it. So we hope that you will all take advantage of the cake at the back. One of the reasons that we stay here is the number of cakes we have in any case, but we're adding to that this week. So please share in the cake, and we'll see you later.
Thanks, Tim.
So Malcolm says I have less than a minute, so I'll try to, we're counting. Especially because of the sermon this morning and the invite to community and the strength in community, I want to remind you about our story project. And there's a